Hi, and welcome to my podcast series, The New Abnormal, which aims to make sense of our COVID-19 world today and tomorrow. I'm Sean P. Lodishenesi, researcher, author, and speaker from Brand Positive. As a researcher, I've spent 20 years conducting ethnographic interviews on global projects. Along the way, I've been lucky enough to have met some amazing people, from psychologists to activists to creatives, some of whom I'll be talking to in this series. I'm also the author of The Post-Truth Business, which focused on trust, empathy, and privacy, while my second book, Influencers and Revolutionaries, looked into innovation, behavioural change, and the climate crisis. So, I hope you enjoy the interviews, and if so, please tell your friends, leave a rating, and watch out for our other episodes. Now, without further delay, let's crack on with today's podcast. So today I'm really interested to be talking with a fascinating individual, Khalil Zafar, who's based in Karachi. He's a global strategy expert, an HR consultant, a keynote speaker, and author of a great new book, Future of Work Simplified. He's over 10 years of rich and progressive international experience in strategic HR, leadership development, organizational renewal, performance management, and organizational development. Currently, he's working as a partner at organizational renewal at Straxacute Consulting in the UAE and Pakistan. He's completed an MSc in organizational psychology and has a master's in mass communication. He's taught people from different nationalities, including India, Pakistan, the Philippines, Lebanon, Jordan, Cameroon, China, and Canada. So, Khalil, hi, and how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. So I'm in Karachi right now.
Okay. Now, I know that your areas of expertise include organizational planning, development, renewal and strategy, talent acquisition, psychological testing, etc. But it'd be great to have a sort of clear understanding of exactly what your career path has been, how you got to where you are today, etc. So, Khalil, perhaps just take us through the winding road that led to you to where you are now.
Before we proceed, first thing is I'm a big fan of your work. I've listened to all your podcasts and you've been doing an excellent job. Now, second thing for our listeners, first of all, English is not my first language. So if I make any mistake or if I pause for words, just remember it's not my first language. So just I hope that would be fine. Secondly thing, if you hear a rooster or child crying in the background, once again, pardon me, I'm at my home. And by the way, it's a new norm. So I think it will be acceptable. So
That'd be fantastic. I love a bit of home life. So if we hear the rooster and the child, even better.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's the new norm. Working
exactly.
From home and all these voices. Okay, now coming back to your first question. I'll start from the, you know, from the beginning. Basically, I started off my career as a journalist. I did my graduation in mass communication. I specialized in media management. It's not the right thing for me. Why it wasn't the right thing for me? Because there was no innovation. I just used to go at work to write the news, write any article, whatever was available in terms of, you know, what's going on in the world, and that's it. So there were a few people, and I'm very thankful to them. They guided me. They said that you're good at management. You just need to organize it, learn more about what management is, what leadership is. And, you know, start a career in that. Then I did my master's in organizational psychology and human resource management from Pakistan. Started working in the field. Started off as an HR executive, then got promoted to HR manager. Then I went to UAE. Currently, I'm working as director and partner of a management consulting firm. I've also held a global HR head position for an MNC. That's just about my, you know, small career progression. I'm not an expert, to be very honest. I'm not an expert. If people think this way. I'm quite humbled. But I like to learn. I like to propagate knowledge. I'm a firm believer that knowledge should be free, just like education in the world. And we should not put tags in selecting people. That's we will discuss this later on. My philosophy of HR, but one of my philosophy of learning is that knowledge and learning should be free. We should not put a price on that. So if just to run your operations, you require minimum things to run your school, colleges, universities, your book, that's fine. But my mantra is free knowledge. So that's just a bit about myself. Currently, I'm more engaged into consulting projects. It's the pandemic, so most of the people, most of the companies are trying to automate their processes. They are looking new ways to invest into technology, how they can reduce their headcounts and enhance their productivity. So this is what I'm doing right now. Most of the clients, by the way, are into the IT sector.
Okay. Could I ask then, so I mean, just cutting to the, if you like, to the really key issue that's naturally impacting us all at the moment. So, I mean, 2020, what a year. From the point of view of the impact where you are of COVID and all of its implications on the world of business and organizations and HR, perhaps just take us through the sorts of things that you're talking about when you give your speeches, and also some of the, you know, the key points that you took out of the book with regards to your interviews, and we'll go through them all specifically in a while. But yeah, first of all, the sort of the key issues that you're talking about in terms of how COVID has impacted organizations on an HR level.
See, it's not only an interesting question, but an extremely difficult question to answer.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you why. See, it's different. COVID has impacted organizations and countries differently. So in Pakistan, or let's suppose in South Asia, it's a totally different scenario from what's in GCC. So what's in GCC is totally different from countries in Europe or UK. So let's suppose Pakistan. Pakistan has more than 250 million people. So it's difficult to manage an already struggling economy, unfortunately, by the way. So it's difficult to manage 220 million people as compared to only, you know, 5 or 6 million people in New Zealand. Now, second thing, the type of organizations and the type of values prevailing amongst the people. Let's say UAE. I work most of my time in GCC. So most of the GCC's economy as well as the companies are dependent on the service sector. So tourism and things related to tourism. Yeah. COVID has impacted them really badly. So we all have the example of Emirates. They have laid down thousands and thousands of people. They are in losses. Construction industry has been on hold. Training industry, which was a huge, huge revenue generator in throughout the GCC, is not making any money. But on the other hand, the difference is it didn't came as a surprise to me. Why? Because, you know, this is the sort of thing that the experts and the futurists have been, you know, telling us for many, many years. The survival of the organizations of great people will be from the standpoint, from the viewpoint that those companies that can invest in technology, those companies who are good at managing technology will be successful. So the prime example right now in the world would be, I think, South Asia, Pakistan and India, where the software outsourcing has increased almost 300%.
Wow.
So the companies, I spoke with a sales director of a software company from a few days back. He said, I'm earning 13 lakh per month. So 13 lakh is in rupees. If he converted, I spoke to a guy who's working at Microsoft. He said, it's twice what I'm getting right now.
Wow.
So people in Pakistan are getting twice as much as what Microsoft is paying them. So just imagine the change COVID has brought to different regions.
Yeah.
So the biggest change that I believe is, first of all, is a change in the mindset.
Yeah.
Leaders have started to realize, you know, that we have to go out of our boardrooms. We have to now act like a futurist. It's time to invest in technology, view technology as an investment, not as a cost. People are investing in human engagement. They are trying to be more empathetic towards their employees. They are trying to be more humble towards their employees. And the biggest change in the people's mindset is that they are trying to upgrade themselves in terms of skills and knowledge. And most importantly, they are looking for new ways to start a business and become an entrepreneur. So I think it's the biggest thing is the change in the mindset that COVID has brought. So
yeah,
this, I think this is the biggest change. But in terms of the organizations, they have realized that without technology, they are not going to survive even in the coming 4 or 5 years.
Okay. And in terms of, and by the way, the book, Future of Work Simplified, I think is so interesting. I've got a copy of it in front of me right now. So, I mean, looking at it, and I think it'd be really interesting if you could just take us through some, or perhaps hopefully, all of the really interesting interviews that you conducted for the book, and just talk about some of the specific issues that those interviewees spoke to you about. So, I mean, starting with the, you know, I mean, the you've got a great foreword by Dr. Ali Fenwick, and then you have a thought message from Sophie Wade, etc. So perhaps just take us through those in terms of, yeah, the people you interviewed, why you chose those specific individuals, and what it is that they spoke to you about.
Okay, so then just a bit of background about this thing. I was writing for a few newspapers and magazines.
Yeah.
I had discussion with a friend and he came up with the idea that why don't you write a book? I said, I don't know what's the process and I don't have the investment. How would I manage? And he came up with, you know, a few solutions and things like that. Once again, from the values point of view, why I'm emphasizing these, why it is different in different regions. See, I work most of the time in South Asia and in GCC. And unfortunately, there is a mindset that if something is written by a person who was born in Pakistan or India or in GCC, it's not of, you know, good level. But if something is coming from Europe or, you know, from Western country, it's a great thing. So this is is the sort of mindset that we have. And that is, you know, throughout the world. If you go and ask any student, what book would you like to read? In terms of engineering, they would say someone from Japan or someone from, you know, Europe. But the same thing, if you ask from management, people will say, I want some people, you know, they are professors at Harvard University or at, you know, Oxford University. So this is unfortunately a mindset. Based on that, and, you know, I'll be very honest, just to eliminate this concept, I approached a number of experts. Now, it taught me a lesson, and it's a great lesson for all the people out there, especially the youngsters and in this chaotic environment. I reached out to almost 75 people.
Yep.
And 75 of them replied back to me.
Wow.
I have this data. Even I spoke with Dr. Fenwick. He's an amazing, amazing behavioral scientist. He said we can even do a PhD, complete PhD on this subject in terms of behaviors. Like, Western countries are promoting intellectuality. So if you reach out to people in these parts of the world, they would appreciate. Whether they have the time or not, they will even refer you to people, or if they apologize, they will still appreciate you. So I sent emails or invites to 75 people. 75 of them got back to me. I interviewed them and chose the best ones, I think, in terms of my opinion, into the book. Now, that's the first thing. The second thing was I learned a lot. these great people, Dave Ulrich and Sophie Wade, they're doing a tremendous job in terms of the future of work. Their insights is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The book is called Future Work Simplified. It's for a reason. My mentality says, and my experience says, that in this age, especially for youngsters, with the change in the mindset and due to the advent of the social net media and social network, are the concentration level has decreased. So people in their 40s and the 50s can read a 300-page book easily, you know, in a few days. But if you ask a youngster in 20s and in the early 30s to read an article of 1,500 words, he will say, can you summarize it on a WhatsApp voice note and send it back to me? And it's less than 15 seconds. So this change in mindset was in my mind as well. So I decided to write a book that is simpler, written in an article style format, so that, you know, the chapters are smaller, to the point.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's easy for people to, you know, grasp the concepts, because once again, I believe that business should be simpler.
Yep.
Those companies that make, you know, complex business models and intricate management systems, they do not succeed. And the second thing is that we professionals, especially in the HR and the leadership level, are making mistakes in terms of decision making, especially in data analytics and people analytics. We are making things too difficult. We come up with formulas and things which are only understandable to few geeks. Only the, you know, best of the minds at Harvard or MIT can understand that. But for the normal employees, it's difficult. So it's better to come up with things that are simpler. So the book is Future Work Simplified. Best people are there. I won't say it's a book that's predicting things. I've written it in the preface. It's not a book of Nostradamus-like predictions.
The first
thing what you need to do in the coming few years, because the amount of change that we are going to experience in the next 10 years, I believe, is going to be more extensive than the amount of change we have experienced in the past 200 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So with so much change, we need to continuously upgrade ourselves and, you know, keep on changing things. The most important things that I found in this book, from this book, after speaking to these experts, was there are, I think, 6 things that require the most change.
Yep.
The first would be the leadership reinvention, what I call it. Leadership should act as futurist, which is a change in the mindset of the leaders.
Yep.
The second would be understanding technology.
Yep.
Third, upskilling due to this technology. So it is upskilling, not reskilling or skilling. Upskilling means to upgrade your skills.
Yeah, yeah.
Then would be working in cross-cultural teams, which many, many people are missing these important things. With, you know, you're talking, you're in UK, I'm in Pakistan. We haven't met each other, but still, we are doing this podcast. So, I need to understand what your cultural norms are. You need to understand mine. So, it's important when you use technology to understand the cultural, cross-cultural things as well.
Yeah.
Then is a concept that was developed by Harvard University, but I, you know, added few things in that. It's called organizational renewal. It's different than organizational development. Organizational renewal is when you change your organization for performance enhancement based on the changing scenarios. Then it becomes organizational renewal. So a bit technical, but most of the things are from the strategic point of view, mission, vision, and values based on the changing environment. And then we have the, you know, the usual talent economy, freelancing, and once again, the most effective utilization of analytics. Future is all about technology and data. Jobs will be all about technology and data. Companies, government organizations, and, you know, people who would be good at managing data, who would be good at managing technologies, will be the most successful people. So these are the main things that I found out from the book. And I hope it will be helpful for people as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely superb. Okay, so just to, again, just to take actually just Ace, those perhaps not in the order you just gave them to me, but to start with number four, you talked about the importance of understanding and dealing with and leading, etc., cross-cultural teams.
Yes.
Now, for instance, not to get into too much detail or politics on a sort of party political basis, but I mean, as we speak, the we're awaiting the results of the US election with a sort of bated breath. Now, from an organizational perspective, let's say if you're running, if you're a leader in a really big corporate that has, and we'll take America as an example, that has a huge workforce, naturally that will include people with very, very different political viewpoints, some very strong, some not so strong. I mean, at the moment, America certainly seems, you know, if the figures are correct, split right down the middle. And there's a lot of animosity there. You know, we can watch any of the news channels and, you know, there is real anger on the streets. And a lot of people saying, there's a population that doesn't even recognize each other.
Yes.
So how do you deal with that, let's say, from a corporate leadership point of view, when you know that you may well be running or having a workforce that heavily dislike each other's points of views, let alone on political. What do you do about that? Do you ignore it and just get on with it? Or do you put things into place to try and calm things down or what?
It's a great, great question. See, putting things under the carpet won't help. There's another saying, if you can't see a thing, it doesn't mean it isn't there. So if there is an issue that needs, provoking, thought-provoking, it needs changes in the mindset, it needs changes in how we behave, how we talk to people. That's why I keep on saying that, you know, the basic element in an organization or the business management comes up with the concept called the values. By values, you drive everything. You drive mission, you drive vision, you drive values, and doesn't matter from which school of thought you come from. But if you analyze our human history, our whatever, you know, some people say it's 10,000 years, some say it's 30,000 years of evolution. So you'll find few things that are extremely common. First thing is we require a text. Mm-hmm. A text could be a constitution. It could be a religious scripture. It's a guidance thing to make sure that we stay on our moral, we follow our moral principles. We follow what's right and what's wrong. That's the first thing. Second thing is that what history has taught us, we require someone to look up to, whether it's an organizational leader, a prime minister, or president of a country.
Yep.
So that's human psychology. But in order to, you know, make the masses move in the right way, you need to, you know, choose the right set of people. That's the first thing. And if you cannot choose the right set of people, I believe you have to, at least the least you can do is change yourself and the people around you. If people can start changing their mindset, start adopting the right set of values and morals and ethics, then it can be done. For organizations, I think it's a bit easy. What most of the consultants and the HR managers do is that they make a mistake. They try to change the people first and not the leader. My suggestion to them is to first change the mindset of the top management and the leadership, teach them what is right and what is wrong, tell them what's the right thing to do, and then it should come down towards the lower end of the organization.
Okay.
Cross-culturally, yes, just one thing, cross-culturally it's different, but you know, with so much of social media and hatred being spread, I think we need to sometime also back up and sometime be a bit, you know, sharp. I'll share a very funny thing with you. Some people will say, oh, it's morally wrong what you did, but for the sake of, you know, research and science, everything is fine. I approached approximately 30 women on leadership role for so that they should write a chapter on women leadership. because I was thinking that I should not write it because I don't have the expertise and the viewpoint to think like what should be the role of a woman in leadership. So I approached approximately 30, 35 women and they all said, no, we don't, you know, talk to men and this happens and this is the problem with the current people. I said, okay, no worries, that's fine. But then, you know, it gave me an opportunity to do a bit of research. I think, so now, what's the takeaway? If you can find a common ground, what can link people up? Okay, at least it gives you a starting point. Now you can talk to that person and, you know, eliminate whatever concepts or, you know, misconceptions people have about you or you have about them. But at least try to start a communication. Start a communication, talk to people. I know it's a bit controversial. I know it's going to be, lots of people are going to be saying it's not the right thing to do. My suggestion would be, if you're working with people in the US, if someone has biasness and someone is aggressive towards you, responding in the same manner, in the same tone, won't help you. So you first have to educate people, find a common ground. What interests people? If they like something, if they want to talk about violence, okay, let's discuss violence. If they want to talk about, you know, no, we don't want to talk about the moral ethics in the organization. Everything that matters is money and performance and be number one through any possible ways possible. Okay, talk to them and find out a way.
Okay. And then what about the issue, again, in terms of where we are now and with the, you know, huge impact that we've seen that COVID has had economically around the world? And we know, as you were saying earlier on, that it's impacted naturally different countries and different sectors in different ways. And so, again, let's say where I am, broadly speaking, the impact on Central and Western European economies has been very, very bad, as it has in the US. We know that, for instance, China appears to be pulling out of that situation at speed. And so, meanwhile, a lot of the talk in management circles and HR circles of last year has looked at things like, you know, spiral dynamics, looking at organizations from the point of view of taking them from the basics of organizational theory from, you know, subsistence level right up to, you know, being and far more humanistic sort of level sort of businesses, mm-hmm. Where it's all about sort of being holistic and all about the rights of the individual and the power of the individual, etc., and flat management structures. Now, in terms of all those economies, and I know it's a really broad question, but I'll ask it anyway. All those economies that have been so badly hammered by COVID. Are we now going to be seeing, do you think, a dropping back, if you like, from perhaps that sort of utopian, sort of aspirational viewpoint of business that was very, very, you know, humane, that was very, very considering, that was highly sort of holistic? Yeah. Are we now going to be sort of dropping away from there to a harder way of doing business because of the constrictions of economies? Or are we far enough down the line of acting in a humane, ethical way that yes. style of business will remain? What do you think there?
I think for smaller companies, this would be the case, but for only for a short amount of time, maybe 8 to 10 years. We are currently right now in Industry 4.0, what we call as the era of automation and big data and technology. But the Industry 5.0 would be machine-human collaboration.
Yes.
How machine and people can be put back into the work. But this is what I think what this COVID has taught us during the past almost 1 year, is that what being human really means. This social and physical distance, I like to call it physical distancing, not social distancing. So it should be...
Okay,
It should be physical distancing. Why should we use the word social distancing? We are already social. Human beings are social. That is why we are human beings. We cannot do 5,000 people work. It's the job of a system. We need people to talk to. We The only difference between a machine and a human is the emotions. We feel pain, we feel depressed, we feel happy, we feel excited. These are the sort of thing that makes us human.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you have, you know, only 5 people working in your organization and the entire systems are being run on AI-based, you know, complex data systems. At the end of the day, you still require human engagement. You require empathy because this is what humans are. In my views, in the coming 2 to 3 years for small, medium enterprises, they will look face possibly sometimes unethical by laying off people, by eliminating few roles just to enhance their revenues, get back into the market, stand up on their feet. But in the longer run, no, human, you cannot replace humans. This is, you know, the best and the worst thing. This is the best and the worst thing. You cannot replace human. You cannot replace human mind. You cannot replace the creativity and the innovation. I always say humans have great capability to do great things. Now, let's say after 10 or 15 years, some great mind comes up and he comes up with something new. What will happen to AI and big data? It can be changed. So, we need humans. So I don't think that, you know, machine-human collaboration will be ignored. It is, once again, different in different parts of the world. Let's suppose in Pakistan, there are certain values which are extremely good. Taking care of people, doesn't matter if someone has, you know, suffering from performance. No one will, you know, fire them. They will say, okay, it's fine. The person has a family and kids, and let's just make sure he do something good. But that's not the case in some of the, you know, in the US-based management system where things are being run on performance. So if you perform, you work. The 80-70-30 or the, you know, 80-20 rule, if you perform, that's fine. Otherwise, you go out. So that's the difference. But on the other hand, there are certain issues with the values. Once again, in Pakistan, if someone says, I'll be there at 4 p.m., it means that that person will come at 6 p.m.
So
the change, has to be taken into account of how people think and how they're going to go about. But once again, technology is going to really decide which company stays and which doesn't. But even if you have technology, you need people. There is a misconception, by the way, just to wrap up this this answer. There's a misconception among people that, you know, with technology, we are going to lose jobs. No, we are going to eliminate few of the job roles, not the jobs. But with technology, more and more jobs would be created. And data proves this. And when we create more jobs, it means putting more people into the work. And when we put more people into the work, it means you have to, you know, once again decide like who stays at what position and things like that. Now there are certain things that people can predict. Let's suppose if things are being automated, do we really need a supervisor? Now that's an important question.
Yeah.
Do we really need, an assistant manager in spite of all the automation? I don't think so. But if you have a good team that is continuously learning, once again, being human, our natural evolution of 30,000, 40,000 years, and our human psychology teaches us that we need someone to look up to, we need a leader to manage us. Leaders will still be there. So that's my opinion.
Okay. Okay, and so in terms of organizations, businesses, brands or whatever that have been doing things in a way, particularly during this year, that you've noted, perhaps you can just talk us through a couple of those that that particularly in the region where you're based, so either in the UAE or Pakistan. Anyone out there that you think, right, there's a really good example, say, of an organization that is doing it in the right way.
I think best examples would be, there are a few in my book as well, Shellbird group of companies, a fantastic example of upskilling and utilizing of data. The owner came to UAE with only few thousand, only few hundred dirhams in his pocket.
Yep.
He established a company. Now he's an MBA. He has completed a leadership development program. He has made a policy that the entire management team needs to go through a leadership development program. There is a learning and development program placed for all the people in the organization. There are two people in the research team that analyzes the competition in the market in terms of technology, how we can automate our processes. So,
yep.
With companies that are willing to change, the leaders that are looking 15, 20, 30 years ahead, doesn't matter if they are big companies or small, they are in construction or they are in IT. If
yep.
they have a vision, what I call as the futuristic vision, 15, 20 years ahead, and it's not difficult to do it. We already have, you know, theories and things in place. Why people don't use SWOT analysis? That's my question. Mm-hmm. It's a simple thing. Pestle, why don't we use it? These are the things that helps the leader to predict in the right way the coming 15, 20 years. So it doesn't matter if there are companies. We always give the example of Amazon, how effectively it is utilizing the data and AI and suggesting things and changing the business models and everything.
Yep.
It is true, but there are other smaller companies in the traditional format changing themselves through continuous learning and utilization of technology as well. There are a number of companies in Pakistan as well, in India. Of course, I know many companies who have come up with new things. There is an excellent company in UK developed by the alumni of Oxford University. And what they do is that there is a software, and what you do is that you cuff loudly. If you have a cuff, that software will record the sound, and it will compare it to the patterns of how the people who have COVID-19 sounds. So let's suppose if someone has a certain frequency for coughing in the COVID-19, it gives you an idea. It is a game changer, considered a game changer in technology, just by through the sound of the cough. You wow. can understand, like, if the person has COVID-19 or symptoms similar to COVID-19 or not. So a simple idea in the right set of time, they have explored.
How interesting. So
depends upon what you do. But once again, the simplest thing would be if companies can change their mindset, they can understand that we have to change and we have to utilize technology and learn. They will succeed.
Okay. And then what about different thing? What about inspiration? So, I mean, you're renowned as giving really, really dynamic talks about things like the future of work and future of HR, etc. So, from the perspective of where you get your inspiration from, yeah, perhaps take us through that. Don't know if you're a great reader, viewer, watcher, or listener. Yeah. So. What's your source?
My sources are a combination of a number of things. So I'll be honest, I read. Best, I think, for people out there would be HBR, Harvard Business Review.
Yeah.
It's the ideal source of information. Then there are many magazines doing excellent job where people can go and find great experts writing great things. LinkedIn is a great place to explore stuff. There are a number of professionals and experts who are writing articles, sharing their ideas. Were there? I regularly go through and read researches. Surveys are extremely important from LinkedIn, Deloitte, PwC. This is also very important. I owe my learning and career progression to a guy named Ibrahim Mohammed. He's one of the leading strategists in UAE by now. A brilliant, brilliant guy, brilliant human being. I have huge respect for him. Although we don't work together right now, but I'm still in contact. My inspiration comes a lot from him. Jack Welch has been a big influencer on me in terms of the management thinking. Although I disagree certain parts of his management tactics, but still, you know, 75% of them have been brilliant. So if someone wants to learn anything, I think it's the best era to learn. Things are available free of cost. You just go to YouTube and number of sources, and you can find great sources. TED Talks are there, and the experts deliver TED Talks, and it's one of the best sources of information. So mine is a combination of videos and surveys and not big books. I'm not, you know, unfortunately, into 500-600 pages of books. I write, like to read something which is precise and to the point.
Yeah. And then also, I noted in the book that it's the book's dedicated to your father. Was he also a business figure, or more of a moral figure, or what, or a combination of both, perhaps, or something else?
He taught me a lesson. His lesson was he was a banker. He passed away, by the way, last year. So he taught me a lesson. The lesson was he worked 35 years in a bank with slow progression. He said, during our era, learning and self-development wasn't much appreciated, or in part, in our part of the world.
Yeah.
So he said, learn, propagate the knowledge, give it to others, and try to explore other options beside your job as well. So that's why I dedicated it to him. He was a fond reader, by the way. The first thing he used to do in the morning was to read the entire newspaper, 23 pages and, you know, 15,000 or 16,000 words. I don't even remember. So he was a fantastic reader.
Yeah. Wow. And then what's coming up for you then? So in terms of, as we begin to get to the end of this episode, it's been so interesting hearing your perspective. What about, so what's coming up for you? Have you got any talks on the horizon, or are you writing more, or purely consulting more? Yeah, what's coming up?
Thanks, I thank God for everything that that I've got. Due to this book, I am engaged into lots of keynote speaking. So whether they are in universities or in seminars, so I'm mostly into discussions related to the future of work from the human element point of view. Yeah. I'm delivering talks at universities to our students, because I think they are the future of our workforce. We need to teach them the right things. Plus, I'm doing consulting, and it's mostly at this stage working with the business leaders, changing their mindset, making them realize what the future is and how they should come up with the proper business management and HR strategy.
Okay, so in that case, last couple of questions. I mean, in the book, and I think as mentioned, I think it's a really, really interesting one. I mean, you cover, you know, a lot of ground there via the experts that you interviewed in different parts of the world. So from the point of view of things like, you know, I just mentioned a few of them. So, you know, leading as a futurist, AI automation and Internet of Things, upskilling and e-learning, organizational renewal, cultural eloquence, the freelance revolution, quantified workplaces, etc. Of all those areas that you cover, was there one in particular that really, really, grabbed you personally from the point of view of thinking that particular area is even more interesting than the others? So yeah, of all of those, was there something that you think that is quite extraordinary?
Yes, people analytics. We as an HR people, or, you know, people working in the organization, are ignoring the power what data holds. Future is all about data, and data is not just, you know, the numbers, how many people are in the organization and what time they come in and what time they go. It's an extremely complex things. If it can be simplified, if complex thing can be simplified in the output, it can bring great results. So the more you understand the data, the more you can enhance, you know, organizational performance, operations. You can come up with new things, how people behave, how you can target market few things. I know a person, he is developing a psychographic system. So whatever data the company have, they can put it inside that software. And that software analyzes in terms of marketing abilities, like this is the sort of personality this person has. And if you, promote these sort of things to him, he will buy. And what sort of language should be used and what sort of endorsement that person will take, whether factual or celebrity endorsement, system decides everything. But that system is being run on data. So the more data that comes into it, the better the marketing, knowledge comes out. Same is the thing with, different fields in supply chain and HR. So I think the future is going to be all about data and the right set of data. That's the most important thing. Al Adamson, the person I interviewed into the book, he told this specifically. It's not just about data, it's about the right set of data. Because there are millions and millions of things out there. You don't need that. You need the appropriate right data, and that should be used ethically and in the right way.
Yeah. Okay, and the last couple of questions in that case. So, I mean, this series I've really sort of, positioned around the three key themes of hope, community, and resilience as things that will help us to get through not only this, extraordinary situation that we're being confronted by, but also the other areas of things that impact us in our daily lives. So what's your take on hope, community, and resilience?
See, future of work and technology is not just about organizations. It's about us as humans. And when we talk about humans, it's about building, resilient communities, building empathy, working together with people, helping them out. Hope, of course, is going to drive us forward. There have been many events in the past, much greater than COVID-19. The World War is one of the prime examples, which killed more people than ever. But humanity bounced back, and it bounced back with, greater energy and greater knowledge. We have seen pandemics before. We have seen bad events before, but this is what makes humans apart from others. We have the innate need to thrive, survive, and thrive in whatever environment we have. So let's be hopeful for the future, and let's be more humane. That's what I think. The future is going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one, but for those people who can remain positive, who can remain humane, and people or organizations who will understand what the future trends are in terms of technology, in terms of data, and in terms of their human resources.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, well, look, it's been absolutely fascinating. So just so the listeners are clear about where they can track you down, Cahill, go on then. So where are you on social media and elsewhere?
I'm pretty active at LinkedIn. I respond to all the queries and messages that I get. So they can find me on LinkedIn. It's just search Khalil Zafar. I'm over there. I regularly write for Entrepreneur magazine, so they can Google me or go to my author profile there as well. I think these are the two main things that, they can get in touch with me. I'll be more than happy to help people out and learn from them as well. Looking forward to, connecting to great people.
Okay, well, no, fantastic. Okay, in that case, the final thing. So I know that you mentioned the book, the top 10 trends that that leaders and individuals almost pay attention to are AI and technology, the pace of change, purpose and meaning, the new talent landscape, morality, ethics, and transparency, and globalization. But as a final point, it'd be really interesting just if you could just give us some final takeaway points that you'd really like to emphasize.
I'm once again I go back to what I'm telling people again and again and once again in this podcast, it all comes down to the values. So if you have the right set of values which are humane, it's going to work out. Secondly, we as people and as leaders need to understand technology is here and it is going to stay. And technology is not just about, you know, things like 3D printing or some software.
Mm.
It's about the entire phenomena that is automating our workforce and our lives, whether it's our cell phones or anything. So technology is here to stay. It is going to impact our lives. So the first thing that people need to do is to change their mindset, act more as a futurist, leave aside the bad habits, learn more, pay consideration to your health, because if you have good health, you're good at work. There's data proves it. And stay connected with people, find ethical ways to succeed, help others in need, and most importantly, continue to communicate people with often, because once this COVID is over, people would rush towards being more social. People love to shake hands and people love to talk, and you know, they will go out. So once we are more social, we require more engagement. So this is a lesson for the organizations. Once we become more social, we require more engagement into the workforce. So human engagement and technology, these are the two takeaways that I think would be the most important thing. And for the youngsters, people out there who are entering into the any sort of business environment, whether they're into marketing domain or supply chain or HR, learn. And by learning, I mean literally everything. Learn anything that that is required, and pay more attention to being more humane, and try to understand that future is all about technology and data.
Fantastic. Well, look, Khalil, that was so interesting. Thank you so much for taking us through those viewpoints. I know you're a busy man, so you're off soon. I'm aware of the time difference between myself in Brighton and you in Karachi. So one of those. So Khalil Zafar, the global strategy expert, HR consultant, keynote speaker, and author of the superb work, The Future of Work Simplified. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the New Abnormal podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a rating, tell your friends, and until next time, goodbye.